This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio, I am Mark Dolan, and we will eat the news after Eric Carmen.
Swim with the fishes, which fish would you swim with and which stroke would you do?
I'm going front crawl.
I don't know, a trout?
Rick Edwards would front crawl with a trout.
Yeah. Decent name for my autobiography. Front crawl with a trout.
My autobiography will be entitled To Butterfly with a Dolphin.
Hang on. Dolphin's not a fish.
Backstroke with a tuna, I'm going for.
It has to be a fish then, does it?
I mean, the clue's in the question.
Yeah, otherwise, been there, mate.
Otherwise, I'm gonna run with an eagle. just freestyle.
Every Thursday, Johnny and Dinelle from 4 PM on FUBAR Radio. Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, I happen to be Mark Dolan, and this is Mark Dolan Eats the News. Over the next hour, myself and two luminaries from the world of journalism and comedy, respectively, will take satirical aim at the week's big stories. And what a week it's been. Referendum fever has hit the UK as we consider our long-term relationship with Europe. Boris Johnson has declared, "I'm out," which is ironic because in the company of fragrant young women, he's usually in. He has affairs. I hope that was clear. Some blame David Cameron's renegotiations as the reason for Boris's departure from the government's position. I've got to say, Cameron's renegotiations did remind me of my own renegotiations with my wife. They tend to involve the words no, we're not, and doing that. Cameron has told the London mayor to get on his Boris bike in a series of barbed remarks in the Commons about his political ambitions and chequered love life. It remains to be seen whether it's all too great a roll of the dice for Boris, but as we've seen from what he wears when he goes for a jog, he's no stranger to gambling. Meanwhile, David Cameron and Jeremy Corbyn have locked antlers, bringing their respective mothers into the argument in a heated exchange in Parliament. The general thrust is that Jeremy Corbyn's mother should have got him to wear a decent suit, straighten his tie, and learn the national anthem. While Cameron's mother should have had him strangled at birth. I am paraphrasing. Meanwhile, Nigel Farage has been on the hustings pushing key strategic surgical arguments about immigrants and their effect on British life, including the pressure they put on jobs. Excuse me, I've just been got at by UKIP. My voice just broke. Yes, including the pressure they put on jobs, the effect they have on available housing, and they're just a bit weird, though, aren't they? See, even when my voice breaks mid-sentence, I won't be censored. In showbiz news, Adele scooped 4 top awards at this year's Brits. It's not known how she celebrated last night, but I'm told her local chicken cottage completely ran out of wings. That joke was co-written with the comedian Leo Kurse. Which is kind of nice of me because it means I'm sort of sharing the credit, but I'm also slightly sharing the blame as well. Coldplay performed a barnstorming set at the Brit Awards in a flurry of confetti, although they found out later it wasn't confetti, just people throwing bits of paper to make them stop. Police last night were called to a Bella Pasta in central London to handle a hostage situation. Luckily, it was all resolved in the end and no one was hurt. The unfortunate woman involved said the worst thing about her experience was the spaghetti carbonara. I agree, it's very gloopy. It's just heavy. Oh, cloying. Now, I don't want to add to the panic about recalled Mars bars this week, but this morning I opened one, right? What's happened to my voice today? Let's go again. I don't want to add to the panic about recalled Mars bars this week, but this morning I opened one and found a load of sugar inside. I just thought you needed to know. Apple have stood their ground and will not unlock the phone of a terror suspect for the FBI. However, in an olive branch, they have offered the FBI the next available Genius Bar appointment. So it means the matter will be resolved in about 3 years' time. I've got to say, I find my iPhone very secure. It's unlikely anyone will ever access my secret information because my iPhone has normally run out of power by 2 p.m. The junior doctors are to take further industrial action against the government over new contracts. Now, I don't want to take sides on this, but all I would say is, isn't it nice to see posh people striking for a change? A report has said that 20% of married men in the UK are in fact gay. 20% are in fact gay. Now, I'm proud to say I'm married and I'm not in that group, okay? I go to Maplin Electronics at least once a week. I buy batteries, I buy cables, I'm definitely straight. And finally, Oscar fever hits this weekend with the 53rd annual Academy Award. I don't know if it's the 53rd. I didn't have time, so I've made that up. But let's just go with it. The 53rd annual Academy Awards. The most hotly fought category this year is thought to be Best Actress. Up for the top prize are Cate Blanchett, Jennifer Lawrence, and Amal Alamuddin for her incredible performance as George Clooney's wife. It's a joke! I'm joking! I know she's a top lawyer. It's okay. I'm joking. I happen to know George Clooney goes to the Los Angeles branch of Maplin at least once a week, and he's constantly buying batteries. Those are the big stories of the week on Mark Dolan Eats the News. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining us. Now it's time to introduce my fantastic guests, top comedian Leo Kearse. He's also UK pun champion, and Jodie Thompson, blogs editor at the Huffington Post. Both of you, welcome to Mark Dolan Eats the News.
Hiya.
Hello.
It's fantastic to have you here. The only story in town. We'll go showbiz in a minute. We'll talk about the Brits and the amazing contribution of these islands to popular music continuing into the 21st century, which is a brilliant thing. But let's go politics first. Jodie, I'm going to put it out there now that you're the blogs editor of the Huffington Post. Your job is to sort of it's to curate opinion.
Yes.
And to make sure that what readers of the outstanding Huffington Post receive on a daily basis and an hour by hour basis is a balanced mix of views.
Indeed, yeah. We see ourselves as beyond left or right.
Yeah.
So we want to be both sides of the argument.
Right.
Obviously, we're very political, that goes without saying, but we want the readers to make up their own minds with the varied voices that we give them. So we're the only publication that would have on the front page, as we did the other day after Cameron's renegotiation with Europe, we had UKIP, we had the Green Party, we had Labour Party, we had Conservatives. Nobody else would do that. And it was representatives from virtually every party that matters with their view on what had happened and going forward with the referendum.
Well, it's brilliant. I love it. It's free. It's a great daily resource and it's balanced. And it means that you're going to be, I mean, it's very similar to you. You're free and balanced. And
I'm free.
You're extremely readable. No, but what, therefore, you're going to contribute today is that I suppose you're not really able to say, oh, I think we should stay in the EU. But what you will say is, here are the various arguments that are floating around.
Well, indeed. And I think I can have a bit of personal opinion with this because it isn't a left or right issue because, as we've already seen, with the major splits in the Conservative Party at the very least, it doesn't seem to be a party political issue necessarily. It is more of a personal thing. Personally, I want to stay in the EU because I travel a lot. It's purely selfish. But an awful lot of my friends live in the EU. You know, what about the 2 million Brits that live in Spain anyway?
Well, that's right.
One of the
arguments, that was proffered by, surprisingly, a pro-European Labour MP. And I think it was a sort of ham-fisted attempt at putting together an argument to stay in. And she, but her language was unfortunate. She said that the people living, for example, in southern Spain are essentially essentially dependent sort of people who are older and a drain on resources. So we'd rather they were a drain on Spanish resources than UK resources, obviously. But so here's the thing. You're in, but obviously probably with an asterisk, and
yes,
it's personal. Leo Kearse, you can say and think whatever you like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in because my mother lives in Spain, essentially. So she's one of these people who's a drain on the Spanish resources, getting all that hospital sangria and whatever they do. but yeah, like, so I'm in the EU, I guess. But all these people are saying, "Oh, we need to leave the EU." They were saying to Scotland, "You need to stay in Britain. We're stronger together." It's like, make your mind up.
Mm.
It's exactly right. I do feel that the parallels are quite significant, that if you accept that you're bigger, stronger, better as part of the United Kingdom, which I think personally think Scotland is, well, then, ergo, that's the same for the UK in the EU.
Yeah.
So I think we've got equanimity on this one. Perhaps where we can create a conversation which is compelling for our many thousands of listeners is not, therefore, to look at whether we should stay in or not, but can we face 4 months of this?
Oh, gosh, it's going to be hideous, isn't it?
Yeah.
The thing with my job in particular, though, we're always trying to find the new argument, the new angle, blogs that push the conversation forward. How that's going to pan out in 4 months is going to be really interesting because there are only so many things that you can say, I think. Although, having said that, there hasn't been an argument yet that's actually given you the figures on how much money actually comes into the UK rather than what we pay out to the EU. I just know this from having been a journalist in East Anglia when Lowestoft in particular was suffering a terrible, terrible decline, and it was EU money that put that town back on its feet again.
Interesting.
And you don't tend to hear that side
of
the argument.
What about this argument that we give the EU 100 quid and then we get sort of £45 of it back? And we're so grateful because they've built a new park or a library on EU money. But you know, the UKIP argument is we keep 100% of that and invest it properly ourselves without the middleman.
Yeah, but then when you've got the kind of government in power that we have right now, they would then be able to make their own rules when it comes to working hours and things like that. The EU have won us things like being able to not work weekends, to not work more than, you know, 40 hours a week. This is all EU directives. It's not actually stuff that's been set here. So,
and also the main purpose, the reason the European Union Economic Area was set up was to facilitate easy trade across borders.
Yeah.
So that generates a lot more wealth than I think we lose in terms of agricultural subsidies to France or whatever it is.
Well, yeah. I think so. I mean, I personally am a pro-European, and I think that my mouth waters at this figure of a population of 500, in excess of 500 million people, all of whom broadly share the same sort of cultural and indeed economic values as us. They're all democracies, they're all market economies, and each of them want to kind of do well and take care of and do the best for their people. So it does seem like a little bit of a no-brainer. 500 million people, that's double the population of the United States of America.
So, and also the nations that are desperate to join. And, yeah. And we're actually having the conversation of coming out.
Although it's interesting because there are nations desperate to join. One such nation is Turkey, which has a questionable human rights sort of record. I'm just curious where, for example, UKIP are actually using the argument about Turkey's potential membership as a reason not to stay.
And they also keep bringing up the Muslim angle as well, don't they?
Yes,
they do.
Although I have it on good authority that really Turkey has no immediate prospect of joining the EU. I think that's and I think particularly post-Greece, if we're to draw one positive out of the Greek crisis, it's that Brussels will think twice before, in a slightly ideological or sort of, let's just say, philosophical way, bringing as many countries in as possible, just because that's the vibe at the moment. Clearly, that process will never happen again. Mm. And it'll be raw economics. It will be the bottom line, and also a look at whether culturally it's going to work, which is a huge question mark for Turkey. Yeah. Well, it has to be said.
But then we'd have more influence over stopping human rights abuses
exactly.
in Turkey if they were brought into the fold. So it goes both ways.
All right. And what also I think what I'm sort of feeling from you, Leo, is you want to just go on holiday in Turkey more.
Yeah.
And you just want to... You can't be bothered to change your currency.
Yeah, why would we want to leave a place...
You've actually asked your mother to move to Turkey, haven't you?
Yeah, just keep going warmer. You know, I mean, that sounds a bit weird, asking my mother to keep going warmer.
Yes, I know. Especially that thing you did with your hands. We're on the radio, but it looked, if I'm honest, that looked pretty X-rated what you just did there.
But yeah, I don't know why we... I mean, Britain is such a... I mean, all right, we're wealthy. We're technically wealthy. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel particularly wealthy living in my shoebox shared flat in, like, northeast London, miles from anywhere. But, like, we're technically wealthy, but we don't have, like, nice food, nice weather, any of the things that they've got in Europe. We don't have friendly people. You know, if we leave Europe, it's going to be harder to get hold of those resources.
And also...
And I did the hands again.
You did. But also, people keep putting up Norway as an example. A... We don't have the same oil resources as Norway.
Correct.
B, who wants to live in Norway?
So,
and also Norway pay huge fees in order to trade with Europe.
Boy,
so
exactly.
So you pay anyway. And there was a nice line from Cameron when he said that one of his colleagues in the cabinet had said that I like the idea of utopia, but I suspect that if I get there, the EU will still be there. And it's like, yeah, we can leave the EU. You don't leave the EU. The global economy is a small thing now. It's a small world, and you can't avoid economic forces from east or west.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just kind of roll with it. So in that case, there's a degree of equanimity on this one, but there isn't out there in the country, is there? And we have breaking news from BBC Online, and it's the latest net migration figure. Now, we have this expression, net migration, and what it means is that between the people who leave this country to go and live somewhere else, like Leo Kirst's mother... versus those who come in, and then you have a figure. And that figure for the year ending 2015 is 323,000 people. So that's a net migration figure.
So that's 320,000 people coming in overall.
Correct.
Right.
Now, I am a great believer in immigration. There isn't any aspect of my life that hasn't benefited from it, whether it's the nurse who has, you know, patched up my son when he fell off his bike, or operated on one of my parents when they needed a new knee, that sort of thing. Whether it's your Uber taxi driver, who's just waiting for Jodie outside as we speak.
Actually, I got a black cabin and it was a lady driver.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Right. See, it's very right on, isn't it? And so I'm obviously a benefit. I'm married, in a sense, an immigrant, because my wife is a beautiful German lady. Our children are mixed race, therefore.
So you and Nigel Farage like that. So.
Exactly. But I've got to say, I mean, just that headline, net migration 320. The idea of 323,000 people arriving every year, it's a bit of a sends a shiver down my spine.
But we've got a declining population. Like, our population isn't refreshing itself at a sustainable rate, so we need new people coming in to...
Is that true of the UK? Because I know it's true of Germany, but is that true of UK too?
I don't know, I just made it up.
Because I've got some last previous set of statistics regarding population in Europe. The prediction for the Germans was that in 20 years' time, their population will... No, this is between now and 2050, I should say. So between now and 2050, the predictions of the German population, which is currently around 80 million, is that the German population will drop to 71 million.
Yeah.
But the prediction for us is that it will go the other way, and it will go from the late 60 millions to 80 by 2050.
Right.
So it would appear, and there are many cynics who have said that Angela Merkel's very sort of welcoming tone regarding the immigration issue was related to Germany's own demographic pressures.
I think it's worse in Spain as well, actually.
Right, yeah.
I read
right.
an article a while ago that whole villages have actually become abandoned because the birth rate is just so low.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And youth employment in Spain is really... youth unemployment is really high, so people leave the
country.
So
maybe a lot of those 323,000 are actually Spanish, I don't know.
So the bottom line
I'd
is
I'd like to know what the breakdown is, actually.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see. Well, although I do know... I don't have the breakdown of... which particular European nations, but I do know that the net migration of EU citizens to the UK was 172,000. So, you know, that plays into Nigel Farage's hands, doesn't it?
Well, it does and it doesn't. I mean, that figure there, that is about a Glastonbury festival size.
Yeah.
That's not really that much when you think about it in those terms. But also, surely these people are coming in here to do jobs that British people won't. I'm from a very rural area in the Fens.
Yeah.
Europeans have come over every summer as, you know, long as I've existed to do jobs on the land that local people would not do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but then there's also the argument that if these people weren't coming over to do them at a reduced rate, then they'd have to pay a decent wage to get local people to do it. So it's keeping the wages depressed for everybody.
This is one of the concerns, of course. And, you know, the British economy is not going to continue growing. I mean, I just wonder whether it's a slight sort of flaw in this idea of the free movement of labour, that it, not only does it put pressure on countries that are prosperous and are attractive, but it perhaps damages countries that are in the opposite situation, and that it creates a sort of uneven flow from year to year of itinerant, you know, EU nationals, whatever their nationality is.
So what you're saying, Spain gets Leo's mum and we get some thrusting young Spaniards to work in the NHS or something.
I can see where your sensibilities lie on this one, Jodie. And it's and obviously a political question now, because Boris Johnson has come into the fray. And I suspect, Jodie, that his arrival on the scene, I mean, it's a coup for the out camp. In fact, I'd go further. I'd say it's a lifeline, because before Boris joined, they really did look like a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, you know, sort of...
Well, there was George Galloway and Nigel Farage.
George Galloway, there? Nigel Farage, and there's some sort of cranky Eurosceptic
Tories.
One
of the crankies. Well.
Yeah, obviously the crankies, right. Both the Jeanette and the other one. But Boris, this is it's a fillip for the out campaign and a blow for Cameron, whatever you look at it.
It is and it isn't, because when you bear in mind, just a few weeks ago, Boris was actually saying why we should stay in the EU. So his arguments are somewhat conflicted to what he said recently. I don't know if you saw the blog post we hosted by Jerry Hayes on the Huffington Post the other day,
right.
Who called Boris a copper-bottomed little shit
okay.
For being so hypocritical and, you know, calling him out on every time that he'd been pro-EU until really, really recently, and said, I can't wait for him to actually come up and answer questions about this. So, yeah, bring that on, because I think his arguments will be discredited somewhat if he tries to explain why he's suddenly made such a massive U-turn.
It's very early days, but what do you think? What does your gut say today, if I take a sort of straw poll from inside your capacious brain, Jodie, of who's which way it's going to go in June? What do you think today?
Today, I would say that we're in. But,
yep.
Yeah, we'll see what happens over the next four very long months.
I wonder whether, Leo, this will be one where events kind of affect things. Figures, like, you know, bits of news like the net migration figure, that's going to help the Out campaign. That's just, but it's come maybe a little too far away from the vote itself. We'll have forgotten that by. But that figure is just, you know, grist to the mill for Arsh, as will be further sort of issues of migration and whether we have another crisis, people drowning, God forbid, in the Mediterranean.
It's going to start ramping up now that the weather's getting better
This is it. So I wonder whether events might play a hand.
Yeah, and I think decisions like this can be driven by emotion rather than facts. So, I mean, if you look at the sort of mass sexual assaults that happened in Germany at New Year, I mean, if we had another one of those right before the vote, that could really encourage a lot of people to vote no.
Okay, but as far as we're concerned, you're both in.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and mainly if it's for no other reason on Jodie's part than sort of just dishy Polish junior doctors.
Perhaps.
Good enough for me too. This is what you're listening to.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Take a quick look at a very unfortunate story, the headline of which from The Guardian is a woman sues a London pub for £4.2 million after tripping in a beer garden. An HR consultant who fractured her wrist tripping over a rope outside one of London's best-known gastropubs is suing its owners for £4.2 million. Common Mazzo suffered the injury after she stumbled over the boundary of the beer garden at Notting Hill's The Westbourne, which is run by the artist Sebastian Boyle. She says she would have expected to earn £700 a day by now in her job if it were not for the 2009 accident. She claims it's destroyed her lucrative career, left her with unsightly scars and post-traumatic arthritis. It also had a devastating impact on her mental health and social life. She was awarded £156,000 in 2013 after she sued the pub's operators. They admitted full liability, but she's been given permission to appeal against the level of the award, which she believes is a fraction of what she deserves. Now, Leo, let's just put this case to one side, because we don't have the privilege of all of the details. What we do know is it's a tragic situation for this lady, and our sympathies go out to her for
extremely... not that tragic. I mean, she broke her wrist.
Well,
she broke her wrist. She's acting like, you know, like they skinned her and stuck her head on a chimpanzee or something. I mean, she broke her... I got run over by a truck when I was 17. I just picked myself, dusted myself off. I mean, once I'd been put back together and spent some time in hospital. But I'm not, like, 20 years on still blaming everything bad in my life on, like, getting run over by that truck. You know what I mean? Like, in the old days, people would go away and fight in wars, you know, lose lungs to mustard gas, come back with no legs, still start a business selling energy drinks or something and, like, become millionaires. Like, none of this sort of, like, oh, I would have done all this, but I had a nosebleed when I was 8. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? I hasten to really definitely stress that with regard to this case, you know, we don't have all the details, and you know, there's this lady is not here to sort of demonstrate the pure hell that she's been through since the accident, which, by the way, has been proved was not her fault. But a wider question, Leo, and I think you've sort of already answered it already, sort of got there, is a broader culture of... stuff happens which can be unfortunate, and you just sort of get on with it like you did. So tell us more. So you were 17 and you were hit by a truck.
Yeah, I was racing my mate on my bike, and I was really stupid, like taking the racing line, been on a 26-mile bike ride in the mountains of Scotland. So we'd seen about two cars come around this corner. There's a big truck coming up the road, so I slammed on the brakes, slid under it, went over my leg, and when I woke up, my leg was like on the ground, and I went to pick up my leg, and my foot stayed in the ground because all the bones and stuff were just mint.
You're kidding me.
So, and it was all ripped open. So later on, I'd loads of metal work in it, and then It got infected because it was all ripped open, so I nearly died from blood loss when I got run over. Then I nearly died from septicemia when it got infected. And it was like, you know, a long recovery process. Not that it sort of held me back in any way.
No, clearly not. But do you have any ramifications from this now, or do you enjoy optimum health?
Not optimum. My leg's pretty sort of, it looks a bit screwed up. I can play football and stuff. I can't play it well. I'm not suing the truck driver for like ruining my promising career as a Premier League footballer. By now I'd be earning £700 a day, you know what I mean?
What do you think, Jodie?
Well, I'm really considering my options because I've fallen over in many a beer garden over the years.
And you've normally wanted to thank the pub.
Just got back up on my feet.
It's been a brilliant night.
Got another pint. I mean, honestly, this is just a bit crazy. And, you know, the two times I've broken my wrist, the last time was at a roller disco, which is obviously asking for trouble. And the time before that was taking down some glitter curtains stood on a beer crate. So I'm now thinking of suing that venue as well, actually. So
yeah, that's quite shocking. I mean, I think we obviously have a culture. I mean, where I stand on it, I think, is that when you're walking down the street, if there's a wonky paving stone, mm-hmm. well, as humans, we are sort of designed to survive the unexpected, and we're designed to sort of look out for ourselves.
Well, I'm skint, so I'm actually looking out for those wonky pavements at the moment to try and fall over them.
I know you're constantly on black and blue with your pretend accidents, like the famously wobbly foobar stool that you've come off many times. But no, here's the thing. I mean, I think that the world is dangerous, life is dangerous, and what you generally do, I mean, I ride a motorbike, so I'm a hostage to fortune on that one. But actually, my relationship with my motorbike shapes my overall attitude to life. My decision to be on a bike is a dangerous decision. There is jeopardy involved. Something could happen. So when I ride, I'm deeply pessimistic. I assume no one can see me. I assume every driver is drunk. I assume everyone is texting somebody on their phone rather than looking out for me. And that's generally how I live my life. As I walk down the street, I kind of look where I'm walking. I have, you know, my eye out for this and that. Where you have to sort of take care of people is if a relative of mine was in a department store and a piece of masonry just fell and landed on her head. And she was badly injured and she was compensated and she deserved that.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't her fault.
Yeah, I hate the general blame culture that is increasing now in our society. You know, the world's a dangerous place.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to have some self-responsibility for this. I think this almost actually goes into the whole safe space, no platforming thing.
Absolutely.
As well. That, you know, oh no, I have to be in my own little protective bubble.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
Well, I suppose
life's
like,
just
who's,
a bit shit.
Who's responsible for your safety, you know, you or others? And I think predominantly it has to be you. And cases that we hear of where people have just sued for the most minor thing kind of, they contradict that theory and it becomes someone else's responsibility.
And I do think it lessens the arguments when people really genuinely do need
Absolutely.
That help.
Correct. And there was a story this week. It was a classic Daily Mail story, a sad face story where they call them that, don't they? The sad face story where there's some human interest individual who's been involved in an unfortunate situation and there's a picture of them. Normally they found a piece of fruit with a spider on it or something like that, or a burger with a dead mouse in the middle. And there's a picture of them with said item looking grumpy or sad. That's the classic Daily Mail fare, which I'm pleased to say Huffington Post don't indulge in unless strictly necessary and newsworthy. And one of those this week was a lad who, unfortunately, he was a teenager. He'd fallen off his bike and he was quite distressed. It happened near a pub, and he went into this pub and he asked for a glass of water because he was distressed. And the person involved would not serve him water because they said it's health and safety. You might choke on it. They're now choking on their words because the mother then went to the pub and gave them a complete mouthful. But that's the problem, is it doesn't just, it's not just people who look for opportunities to sue and to litigate, but it's also any employee now is afraid to do anything and to help out in any way for fear that they're going to get in trouble further down the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, we had that terrible story in China of this was a few years ago, and a small child that was hit by a car and lay on the road for many, many minutes.
And nobody before somebody help.
No, and then there was footage of people just walking past. It's a child just probably dying on the street.
Have you heard the most recent thing from China, though, that if a motorist accidentally hits somebody, they deliberately then run them over because it costs them less than getting sued for the injuries.
What? So basically they'd rather go to jail than get sued?
Yeah. They're actually killing people deliberately. If they've hit them, then they go back, run over them, because it costs too much if they survive.
I live in Archway in North London. It sounds like a policy in that area too. And if you try crossing the road over to Poundland, I mean, good luck to you.
I mean, this is where we need EU legislation around car accidents to come in and, like, you know, rationalise everything.
Well, the theory about why people were walking past in China is exactly what you said, which is that if you help the child to their feet, get them to hospital, the family will then, further down the line, sue you on some trumped up charge, yeah. And then you're destroyed, which is very, very unfortunate. But we obviously, in the case of this lady, we wish her well, and she will pursue her action, and she may well be successful. Let's take a look at Zach Goldsmith. Speaking of millions, Zach Goldsmith has made more than £10 million in income and capital gains since becoming an MP in 2010, his office has disclosed. The Conservative candidate for London Mayor received 22 times as much money from his trust fund as he earned from his salary as an MP. Of course, his father was Sir James Goldsmith, the billionaire. And, well, it's obviously unbelievable figures we're talking about, Jodie. Mm-hmm. But is this the shape of things to come for public figures, that in order to be trusted and to be elected, they're just going to have to publish and be damned?
Well, yes. And also, it's a slightly frightening reflection, and there are parallels with Donald Trump, of course, that his whole standing is saying that he's a successful businessman. Actually, no, if he'd have invested the money he'd have inherited, then he would have made more. He's just lost money on what he inherited.
It's exactly right. It's, we need to remind ourselves he's not really a self-made man, because his father was the equivalent of a billionaire.
And actually, yes, not a successful businessman when you look at the figures.
Yeah.
But yeah, is it just going to be that only rich people can be in positions of power, because that's the only way?
Leo, in principle, I find it refreshing that Zach Goldsmith has done this. It's the opposite of being evasive. It's the opposite of smoke and mirrors. He's just putting it out there. Yes, I'm a rich man. I'm sure that there are plenty of good causes that benefit from some of that money. I'm looking at his record. I suspect that's true. He's a keen environmental campaigner, among other things. He does strike me as one of the good guys, but he's one of the rich good guys. Why is it our business, though, to know what he earns?
Oh, I think it's really important. I mean, how can you relate to somebody who earns, you know, £10 million? You know, that's more than twice what I earn. And and what's important, his income from this trust fund, and this is just, you know, what he's drawing down from the trust fund, so he's worth billions more.
Yeah.
But this income from the trust fund is 22 times as much as his salary. People are always complaining that MPs are overpaid, they get expenses, all this kind of stuff. They're not. They get paid about the same amount as a head teacher in a failing school.
Less
than a head teacher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need to look at Singapore, where all the MPs get £1 million each, because I want people to be doing their MP job feeling well paid and not looking to corporate interests to get backhanders, to sit on
I
boards
completely
of directors.
Agree. I completely
and
agree.
Yeah, sorry, and I was going to say, that's why this is important. And following on from MPs' expenses, then the scandal therein, I think there has to be as much transparency as possible, because people need to know how they're funding themselves, so whether they genuinely mean what they're campaigning for.
My absolute bugbears about this country is the small-minded, petty attitude we have to anybody, really, in the public realm. The bottom line is the responsibilities that MPs have. They're responsible for the lives and livelihoods of several hundred thousand constituents, each and every one of them. So they are important people in our society, and they have a big responsibility. And then they also do work long hours, and they work very hard. And I think that they should definitely be paid more. And it irritates me that the British public think they should just be doing it for nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think if that happens, you'll lose good people. Because there are lots of individuals, for example, talented working females who may have a family, who will look at the package that's available as an MP and go, do you know what? I'm just not going to be able to make that work. We need those people in Parliament. We want
those
people
exactly
in Parliament.
They're exactly the people we need.
Well, look at somebody like Jess Phillips. You know, a mum of three, I think I'm right in saying.
Right.
She's having to come down backwards and forwards from Birmingham all the time because she's a proper MP for her constituents. That must be so tough to juggle all those things as a mum. But she's exactly the sort of person that you do want as an MP and in the Houses of Parliament.
Well, that's exactly right. So, well, Zach Goldsmith, of course, is he's running for London Mayor. He's aiming to take over from Boris Johnson. And it's going to be a harder sell, isn't it? Because when you look at figures like that, immediately the Londoners are going to think, yeah, well, I've got nothing in common with you.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. How much was Boris Johnson worth, though, when he was running to be mayor? Or, sorry, Boris Pfeffel whatever Johnson, his name, actually.
That's exactly right. He's certainly a man of means himself, as is Tim Cook, who is, of course, the CEO of the largest, it's actually the richest company in human history. Apple are an extraordinarily successful business, but they're also a very powerful business. And it's not just when it comes to alleged tax avoidance, it's not their market share in the electronic economy. It's actual sort of state-related information. Tim Cook has penned a new memo reiterating his refusal to unlock terrorists' iPhone, and he asks the feds to drop the request, while Apple suggests the government create a panel to deal with the encryption issue. So it's pretty simple, really, which is that we have a relationship with our smartphones where that's our information, that's personal to us, we own it, and therefore we're sovereign over it. Should Apple be, you know, contravening that sort of sacrosanct relationship we have with our own data?
Well, I don't know why the FBI are so bothered. They could just go down the Kilburn High Road and get it unlocked if it's that important.
Easily, easily.
But no, I think the fact remains that, you know, there's a major issue here of, you know, the whole Big Brother is watching you and the amount of information that you do have that becomes public property. And you've got the law that's... the government are trying to push through at the moment to stop encryption of WhatsApp and various other things, and Theresa May is rubbing her hands together. So I think it's important that Apple stand their ground on this.
Yeah, what do you think, Leo? I mean, there's a lot of compelling material on your smartphone.
Yeah. Well,
I actually had to borrow your phone a few weeks ago. I accidentally went on your browser. And I aged 10 years with what I saw. It was traumatic.
I mean, there's a balance to be struck because, I mean, there's a huge amount of information, valuable information, that can be gleaned from smartphones. I mean, for example, the failed tube bombers were caught using triangulation. Obviously, that's not actually looking at data on the phone. But, I mean... The police, I mean, I don't know how it works in America, but over here you can make a request for a warrant to tap phones, to unlock data, to look at call history, to identify. I mean, one of the ways that, because I used to work for the police as an intelligence analyst, and one of the
You've
ways...
You've really lived a life, haven't you? God, how old are you? You're like 200 years old. What's going on?
I mean, one of the sort of cheesy ways of getting somebody's a criminal's number when you're phoning them, when you're trying to get hold of them, is to phone their mother and say that you're looking for them in association with this crime.
Is that
and
right?
And then tag, see where they call next, because the mum will be straight on the phone to their son, be like, you know, the police are phoning for you, you know. So then you've got the criminal's number.
That's mm-hmm. remarkable.
And I call them criminals and not suspects because I'm very right-wing. But
I mean, I wonder, I sort of take the view, in a way, it's quite a disappointed sort of world-weary view that I have, which is that nothing that goes on my smartphone or into the cloud is really exclusive to me. I think the minute that technology is involved, it can be hacked. I mean, whether or not Apple relinquish the information that's on my phone against my will or not, the bottom line is that it's a third-party device, and most things are sort of, you know, go up to the cloud and everything. We saw that with celebrities with, you know, having very intimate photos, which were never intended for public view. It's all online. It's all on the internet. I've checked. I've spent a lot of time looking into that just to make sure that I'm fully, you know, informed about those issues regarding Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I mean, you know, the bottom line is nothing's sacred unless it's written down and locked in your drawer.
Yeah. I mean, the big surprise for me with this is that the FBI can't already do it and aren't doing it without telling anybody.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Although it is an interesting sort of battle of wills between sort of Apple and it does show how powerful these technology companies are now, and how they sort of just are on a par with government departments.
They've got a bigger economic output than some countries, haven't they? So,
yeah, absolutely right. This is what you're listening to.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
In the company of the extremely brilliant and marvellously excellent Jodie Thompson, who is the blogs editor at the Huffington Post, which is There's got to be some statistic about it. The world's most read online newspaper or something?
By Jove, I think that's it.
Is that the one?
Yes.
That'll do. We'll take that, won't we? We'll take that.
Insert English language into that.
All right.
That is exactly what we are.
So what's the most read non-English language newspaper? Do you know?
Is it Weibo or whatever in China? I don't know. I'm guessing, but...
Okay. And it's a brilliant thing. And we also have another marvellous man, which is one marvellous man, Leo Kurse. And he is a top comedian. What's your Twitter handle, sir?
It's Comedy Leo.
Comedy Leo. So add Comedy Leo. And you are most likely preparing for an appearance at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe this year?
I am, yes. Yes.
Now, you've done this before in a full solo show?
Yeah, I've had two full solo shows. Yeah. So I did one of stand-up. I did another one of improvised puns as Pun Man.
Yeah.
I also run a show called Hate and Live, which is improvised hatred. So the audience writes down what they want the comedians to hate on, then it comes out of a bucket and the comedians have to be like, I hate, and then whatever
it is. It's a brilliant idea.
It's really good fun.
Kittens, for example.
They have to say why they hate kittens.
It's fantastic. And so are you going, is Hate and Live going to be making an appearance this year?
It is, yeah. We're just in negotiations with venues at the moment. So,
great. And you're also going to do your own thing as well?
Hopefully going to do Pun Man 2, Girls Just Want to Hear Puns.
This is very strong. And how hard is it, like how time consuming is it writing puns, would you say? Like, what could it be? If I was to, in a sort of Stephen King misery sort of way, like lock you in a secluded cottage in the mountains.
Yeah.
And only just give you sort of food and water and basic, you know, in a day, how many puns could you knock off?
Probably about 100.
Are you serious?
They're easy to write. It's quite hard to it's a numbers game when you're trying to make good ones. But it's, you can certainly write. You can just, it's unlimited. You can do several a minute.
There's a job for you as a headline writer if you ever want to come out of comedy.
Absolutely. And it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's an amazing job you have, because I suppose I'm minded of the brilliant Neil Simon play, Laughter on the 34th Floor, which is a brilliant play about a writer's room in the heyday of American comedy in the 1960s. And in this writer's room, you had Mel Brooks, a young Woody Allen, Sid Caesar, all these icons. And a lot of the dialogue in the play is comedians arguing about which day of the week is the funniest day. It's like, Monday is a funny day. Tuesday is not a funny day, because Tuesday is not a funny word, and Monday is a, you know, and certain numbers, like 11 is funny, but 9 isn't.
Yeah, well, it's like us this morning arguing about what's funny, like Pizza Hut, Chicken Cottage.
We were deliberating over, I mean, altogether, ethically, I was deliberating about any sort of reference to the amazing Adele's appearance, because I hate blokes making jokes about women based on their appearance. But the problem is, if you're trying to do a gag about Adele, it's either the fact that she writes songs about her terrible relationships, or it's her appearance. And the debate was the reference, Chicken Cottage or Pizza Hut.
I would have gone for Chick Piz. I'm not sure if you're aware of this establishment in Stoke Newington.
Tell me more. No, you see, I like the sound of Chick Piz.
Yeah,
sounds up market.
Is it chicken? Is it pizza?
Actually,
who knows? Let's go for Chick Piz.
Chick Piz sounds like a really sordid website that would be bookmarked on Leo Kurse's encrypted phone. Come see those chicks piss.
But no, I
chicks pissing and no. Okay, I'm gonna stop
right
there.
I think
you
could take your Adele joke as the fact that she's a down-to-earth girl who just likes her fried chicken. Doesn't have to be about her.
And I love Adele, and also I think she's stunning and beautiful as well,
and really very
voluptuous. So I wouldn't change a thing. And in fact, it takes us nicely to the Brits. Another great night. Celebrating British talent. I mean, you know, Coldplay, One Direction, Adele.
But no Stormzy, no Laura Mavula, no...
No, it's a good point. Mm. I mean, some of those artists are the biggest musical stars on the planet. So the UK, still getting it done in music terms, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it's a shame that they didn't use the platform to celebrate more diverse artists. I do really agree with that. You know, Brits so white hashtag that's been doing the rounds.
Well, that's really interesting. See, and what would you put that down to? Just prejudice?
Well, I was a music journalist for many years before I was at the Huffington Post. And I just think the record industry, there's a lot of white middle class men involved.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to change a bit from the roots up. I don't think it means to be racist at all. I'm not suggesting that for one minute.
Sure.
But... it's quite a staid conservative panel of people who are deciding who gets what. You know, I've got friends who, for example, are on the Mercury committee, and you couldn't get a more diverse bunch. That's reflected, generally speaking, in who is nominated for a Mercury. But the Brits, it's all, it's commercial. It's who gets in the charts. It's who's got vested interests. It's not really a genuine reflection of all of the talent in the UK. It's the commercial talent.
Yeah.
And James Bay.
And I think the record industry, with the pressure on the finances, you know, with CD sales slumping and everything, they want to play it safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose it's a bittersweet thing then. To look at the incredible success of British artists is one thing, but when we've got our own awards ceremony where we should be celebrating the whole of the industry.
It's a global showcase. You know, take advantage of that, for heaven's sake. Because everyone is looking to Britain, because our music industry is so diverse. It is so nurturing. You know, we start trends. We always have done. So, you know, just maybe a few nods to some of the urban artists out there.
Well, they're having talking about diverse artists in the music industry of this country. Let's talk about Phil Collins. Because Phil is set to marry his ex-wife, Oriane, again, following a record-breaking divorce. The divorce settlement was extraordinary. They split in 2006 after 7 years of marriage. Oriane remarried and had two more children and moved to Florida. Phil stayed in Switzerland, where he admits he drank excessively to console himself with the loss of his family. He paid out £25 million, which is a pretty penny. But they're now back together.
Against all odds.
Against all odds. Nicely done. I tried to get the word Sussudio into a punchline about Phil Collins, and I've got to say, I laboured over it. But I find this a good news story.
It's lovely.
I don't know. Have either of you, in your romantic histories, ever gone back and did it work?
Yes and no on both occasions. But, you know, kind of, well, you've got to know that, you know, that it's totally over. That the fat lady has sung and, you know, all the rest of it.
I'm very torn about it because I think, enough of Adele, I think I'm here all week. I think that on the one hand, the orthodox view is, well, you split up for a reason. It didn't work for a reason.
Yeah, £25 million worth of a reason.
Yeah, just a bit. On the other hand, you met for a reason. You fell in love for a reason. Yeah. Which side of that argument do you fall on, Leo?
Well, I think it can work for them, but 25 million quid, does he get that back?
I mean, what happens? The wedding, at the reception, does the priest just sort of say, well, you know, he's got to give her a ring and she's got to get the checkbook out?
Yeah, yeah.
She's got to hand over her card. And I think it's going to be too high a figure for contactless. And I don't think PayPal can carry that sort of level of currency. But, I mean, I'm sort of tickled and warmed by it. And I think sometimes in a relationship, you know, sometimes you get swept up in a relationship where there's a momentum and you get carried along and it just happens.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether at no point do you ever say, have we really decided that we're doing this? And so there's a crisis point and then you split. And it's only when the person's gone that you sort of think, you sometimes have to
That time apart to
And although happened. I do wonder whether having like two children and all that stuff in between, it's quite a lot to sort of fulfill to sort of get over in his mind, isn't it?
But other celebrities have done it. I mean, Liz Taylor and Richard Burton famously split up and got back together.
Don Johnson and Melanie Griffiths.
The aforementioned crankies who have vacillated over the years.
You know what kept their relationship going? They were swingers. It turned out
this is the allegation.
I just can't believe
you have to read the book, by the way.
They've admitted it, have they?
They've written a book. Yeah.
I can't believe that in the '70s, all these like Jimmy Savile, all these people were having sex with actual children when they could have been shagging wee Jimmy Cranky.
And on that note, we'll move to our last couple of stories. Let's fly through these because the clock is against us. I've got a journalism story which will no doubt have crossed your radar this week, Jody, and it's The New Day.
Yes.
It's a brand new newspaper. Now, this is a week, 10 days after The Independent have essentially waved the white flag and said, we're not going to publish The Independent in a hard copy format anymore. It's only going to be online. Meanwhile, The Mirror Group are bringing out a daily newspaper, which I think is going to be a little bit like The Eye. It's going to be sort of quite accessible and tabloid, but with some of the Mirror Group's political sentiment.
Perhaps, but what they have said that they're focusing on is very much a reflection of one of the Huffington Post's policies, which is called What's Working, which is about looking at solutions-based journalism right. and constructive journalism. So it's quite nice that we are doing something so well that they're copying some of our
Well, yeah, now listen, you guys are available exclusively via PC, you know, your laptop, your Mac computer,
or
your smartphone. Is there...
Even the FBI can get us, no problem.
They totally can. Yeah. But is there any argument for the Huffington Post having, you know, an issue which you can actually hold on a piece of paper while you're on the tube?
I don't think so. Having said that, I still think there's very much a place for print media, and I think there always will be.
Where is that place, though?
Well, when I'm reading it in the bath and long soak, I don't want to drop my tablet.
Until Apple bring out the waterproof iPhone.
Yeah. No, I do think there is. And also, what I really like with print media still is that you will be introduced to topics that you might not necessarily have an active interest in, and you will learn something, because algorithms tend to present you with things that you already know about and
right.
whatnot. So I do enjoy actually having a physical paper of occasion. That tends to be the weekends
for me.
Do
you think some kind of physical paper will always be there?
I do, yes.
Okay, what about you, Leah? Would you read this?
I don't think that I would. I mean, they're saying that they want to bring out a paper that's the middle ground. It's not like sensationalist or stuff. I think people read the Daily Mail, they read the newspaper because they want the sensationalism. They know it's sort of they know it's concocted, but it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, I think bringing out a paper called The New Day, it sounds like a Scientology pamphlet.
They haven't really checked out their SEO online because there's an awful lot of Twitter accounts and everything already called The New Day, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But then if it's print only, I guess they won't worry
about
it.
I also find
that.
It just a bit twee and a bit patronising. However, what they're trying to do is be different.
Yes, and that's admirable. And also,
you
know. Really, really good luck to them, because there's nothing more exciting than working on the new launch of a publication.
There you go. So good luck to them. That's going to be... hitting newsstands next Monday, priced at 50p, unlike the Huffington Post, which is a hashtag free, hashtag just saying. Also, FooBar is free too. Let's finish on a quick couple of bits and bobs, actually. We've got only a few seconds for this. Fake tan and short skirts. English women are vulgar, says Hollywood star Kristin Scott Thomas. Let's give Leo a chance to respond to this. What do you think? Yay or nay?
I think English women are
only the good ones.
Slightly vulgar, but that's the way we like them. And my girlfriend's from Newcastle. She would probably be considered vulgar by Kristin Scott Thomas, but I like her a lot more than Kristin Scott Thomas.
And on that note, I'd like to thank the incredibly unvulgar, amazing Jodie Thompson from the Huffington Post and Leo Kurz. It's been real. See you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. What a blast. Thanks for listening to FUBAR Radio. Keep it FUBAR 24 hours a day.
Never knew you had. Well, you got something right for once in your life. And time races on when the old spark is gone. You waste each other for a brief moment in the light. Drink until it's over. All we do means nothing, nothing now. And I can keep my head up. And if I let you down, I can keep my head up. A tragic cliche, you never knew you were. So you jump right in. Swam for your life. We both needed space, someone else's pillowcase to rest our necks on. We'll be alone for a little while. Fade me out. fade you out. How very English of us. So maybe now we'll fade each other out. So fade me out. I'll fade you out. How very English of us.